interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
You see, one of the most common questions you get in the world of law enforcement from non-law enforcement people, civilians, what's your favorite part about the job? And for me, it's 100% grab ass. It's not it's not the work you do. It's not all the cool stuff you get to do. It's when you've been working with a group of dudes for a long enough time and all the shenanigans that happen in between calls, on the way to calls, in the locker room before and after work. That is 100%, you know, it falls into the camaraderie side of it. But there's this dude on my squad, and he was from New Jersey, and he was a little short dude, talked with the New Jersey accent, but he was like a really, really excitable guy. So about once a month, man, I'd get on a call and he'd be my check-in, and I would already get to the call. I'd clear the call, but I wouldn't clear it on the radio. So he'd still be coming to check in. And, you know, I was still in, like, I'd done handled everything. And I'd always wait till, like, he was in view of me. And I would take off running like I was in a foot pursuit. and he would just go as fast as he could. He'd jump out of the car. He'd get all crazy. He'd start running. And I would just stop. And he'd be like, well, where did he go? Where did he go? Where did he go? Why are you stopping? Why are you staring at me? That, oh, I can't do New Jersey that well.
Not even a bit.
And then there'd be nobody there, and I would just be staring at him, and he'd be like, you motherfucker, are you fucking kidding me? You fucking did it again. I would get him with that at least once a month, man.
That's pretty solid.
There was a guy that used to get a dollar worth of pennies, and he would put 25 cents in each of, like, basically like the rims of the old patrol cars, like the Crown Vicks and stuff. I guess the way the rim had, like, locked it in, he would put 25 pennies in each wheel and then wait for that officer to respond to a call. And then he would call in a noise violation at that location of, like a loud rattling noise or whatever. So it was all fun and games until he did it to a district commander. And the guy came back in absolutely hot because he'd just gone to, like, a hot call. Came back in, he's covered in sweat, and he's got, like, brake dust all over his hands because he can't get all the pennies out of the whatever, the hubcaps or the wheel wells or whatever. So
you can't let it backfire, man. Like, I mean, the dude on my squad, though, he got on the radio once, and then I had to get on and say, disregard the suspects out of sight with calling up. He's like, yeah, maybe I need to rethink doing that, but. Hey, man.
Or like the old days when you put you spray pepper spray, like, on the grass, so that when your buddy has to step on the grass to get into the car, it gets on his shoes, and then he gets in the car, and, like, the air conditioning or whatever, the heat starts circulating and in the car.
I've seen dudes do it in the AC vent, but I wasn't. That's that cruel,
yeah.
Man.
Don't do that. You know what you do in the AC vent is you put about 3 weeks worth of hole punch dots in the AC vent. Or baby powder will work too, pretty good. But that can screw up your laptop in there or some of your equipment, maybe. But I don't know.
So what you're saying is we shouldn't mess around.
What's that?
That's what you've heard.
Yeah. I'm terrible at playing pranks like that because I can't hide it. You know what I mean? Like, when someone comes in and says, "Did you do that?" I'll either start laughing or I'll just go ahead and confess. So
we had a unmarked car that we rolled around in for a long time. I think it was a Murano. Is that a Nissan?
You asking the wrong dude, man.
Yeah, it was a fancier SUV. It was a drug seizure, and we rolled around in it. And it had seat warmers. You just flip it on. You can turn it to high or low.
Mm-hmm.
And my sergeant would always turn mine on. But he figured out how to cover up the light so I didn't know it was on. And you'd be sitting there for like an hour with like the worst swamp ass, and you'd have no idea why. And then you'd be like, son of a bitch, damn seat warmer. And he'd start cackling away. I was waiting to see how long it would take.
He's the same one that was always good for being real nice, like during a search, and would ask you if you wanted some hand sanitizer. So he'd have like a big container he would carry of hand sanitizer. So you put your hands out and he would squeeze it as hard as he could, like the squirt caps, you know, not the pump, but like the squirt. And of course, then now you got like half the freaking thing of hand sanitizer in your hands. Just stupid stuff like that nobody really wants to have to deal with at a scene. So one thing I will say, Ski, is apparently somebody put a picture up in your squad room, isn't that right? Like back in the day, with instead of using cut and paste tools like on Microsoft or something, they cut a photo out. Is that what it did? It takes over a person's body.
It was an old school picture of David Hasselhoff in a banana hammock with like a jacket on with no shirt under it, and then they put my face on it, and it hung in the squad room for like a year.
The best part about that is when you sent me that, it in black and white, it looks like it's supposed to be you, just a little off. You know what I mean? Like with your eyebrows like arched up. It's silly. The good news is I'll post it, so
yeah,
someone can check it out on our Instagram account.
That's when Photoshop was good, man. Like you never wanted your buddies to take a picture of you, right?
Exactly.
Then, you know, they go get it developed, right? Old school.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
Going and getting it developed, and the next thing you know, you got like Xerox cutouts of
yeah. It took it going on. It took effort to do it back in the day, yeah. Man. It's no fun now. It's too instant gratification, man. Like somebody went out of their way to mess with me, man.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah. We used to do that back in another life at the tattoo shop. Like you never wanted your photo taken.
No,
you know, like he was going to end up on some stuff. So,
yeah. BC, I think you need to tell the people who we're talking to today.
Yeah, man. And you just mentioned tattoo shop. We're going to come right back to that. So we finally got Steve from Alpine Arms on here. We repost his stuff a lot. You'll see, I think, man, within probably the last two weeks, we've been reposting like music references and stuff. We go back and forth. Just a cool cat. Met him back in 2020 at SHOT Show. And we started talking about music and firearms. And just since then, have text messaged back and forth. Like I said, reposted stuff on Instagram. We finally got him on. And we want to be able to talk about his firearm stuff, his company, what he's got going on. But I mean, just to kind of give you a heads up, his background is in, we'll just say like his experience in special operations. And we'll keep it, you know, generic at that. But the cool thing is, like we've always said, like that music, that bond that we find with other people, like that's what Steve and I used, you know, would text and send stuff back and forth about. So, of course, we're going to get into music and stuff, but I want to talk about the tattoo shop. Tell us about that.
Yeah. Oh, man. So, it was kind of an interesting deal. Great time. But, I mean, so my senior year in high school, obviously, I've been tattooed or heavily tattooed for like a long time. You know, started getting tattooed at like 15 at professional shops. It wasn't like street shops, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I ended up, you know, kind of getting an apprenticeship by a buddy of mine, Lloyd, and worked at this, you know, at the time it was a really popular shop, one of like the oldest ones in Phoenix. And I actually got like school credit, my senior year to go to the shop. So,
you know, like a half like day program.
Yeah. I think I got out at like noon or something, and it was, you know, I want to say a work release thing, but you know, something similar to that.
Yeah.
And, dude, it was a cool experience, you know, kind of started out on the body piercing side of it and then started drawing and got into the tattooing side later. But you know, things kind of shifted and, you know, a lifetime, if you will, later, you know, it's still something that I enjoy looking at and all that stuff. And I still keep in touch with, you know, a handful of those dudes.
Do you still draw though, or no?
No, man. Yeah. So the cool thing was, is, you know, I came up in that time where there were still some of the hardcore bikers and stuff in the industry, right? That, like, you know, the super, like, dudes are still doing it, you know. Grimey's one of those guys, Mike Roper, all these guys that came up from that, you know, early 90s, kind of late 80s time frame. But like you like for those guys, like it was pretty hardcore, you know, like it was like that old punk rock thing where, you know, if you opened a new shop and they didn't want you there, like you were gonna get, you know, bad stuff was gonna happen to the shop, right? You know, and it's like, imagine that they never opened. But, you know, it was a cool thing. But yeah, I mean, I grew up, you know, all those guys that kind of like took me under their wing. It was like, if you didn't dedicate 100% of what you were doing to that, then don't do it. So, you know, end up, you know, changing, you know, career fields and stuff like that. a little bit. And, you know, I was just like, okay, well, if I can't dedicate, you know, 24 hours a day to this thing, that kind of took over the life, you know, I was like, okay, I'll just put it on the back burner, but still, you know, try to steer people in the right direction to the right artist for what they're looking for, you know?
Yeah. A buddy of mine used to tell me a lot of stories about the '90s and how, like you said, you still had, I mean, of course you still got biker clubs that go in and out of, you know, tattoo shops, but he was talking about a guy who was a tattoo artist, and basically a guy came in there, went sideways on them. And this dude, like it's 1970 or something, pulls a 38 revolver out of his waistband and just starts hammering on the guy's forehead, man. Oh, yeah. You know, so, and I want to say at that time was like that area they were in was one of the places that it finally started allowing tattoo shops to operate there. I just kind of always assumed everywhere had tattoo shops, but I guess the 70s, 80s, 90s, it was heavily.
Yeah, no, dude, it was regulated more. And even Phoenix, I don't know, you know, they had, you know, mid 90s, you know, it was maxed out at like 12 shops for all of like Phoenix metropolitan area, right? So it was like, you know, obviously Phoenix has a huge population, but if you look at it, you know, like anything, your coast, your East Coast, West Coast, there's a ton of talent there. And then Phoenix was like a huge hub for that, you know. I mean, you know, you had a bunch of dudes that are still big names in the game that came up, and some of them left, you know, but a lot of them still stuck around, dude. You know, they were all skateboarder, little punker kids that, you know, ended up going into these shops, and, you know, these old biker dudes kind of took them in and, you know, let them clean the shop and stuff for free, you know, and pave the way and earn their dues. But yeah, dude, totally different scene compared to now. I mean, like even, you know, the artwork itself is way different, you know.
When BC was in high school, he went on a spring break trip to Daytona Beach, and he got a fake tattoo around his belly button and a magnetic belly ring. And
oh yeah, I did, huh? Daytona, huh?
Little bullseye, don't get me pregnant.
Yeah. That may or may not be a true story.
I don't know, man. You just seem like the type of guy that didn't want to commit to it, but you still wanted a tattoo for the weekend.
Yeah, and, which makes it twice as bad. One, I get a tattoo around my belly button. Two, it's fake. If this story is even real. This story may not even be real. Well, I may not have ever even been to Daytona Beach.
That was around the time of mesh tank tops too. So like you could see, you wanted to just show everything off, man.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if you're going to do something, you might as well do it. Right.
Younger days, man. When you get the body for it, you just rock it.
So Steve, when you're talking about the tattoo culture though, the crazy thing, and we've had this discussion numerous times, is how the culture itself has changed in America, where like one of my buddies has made a lot of money tattooing because everyone started getting tattoos.
Oh, for sure.
There's good and bad to this. So the good part is he can make a really good living. Bad part is that subculture now gets kind of exploited by the mainstream.
Yep.
And he's even talked about, you know, you end up having to do tattoos that you normally wouldn't even want to do. Like, you know, like the typical, this, you know, a fairy tattoo or a dolphin tattoo or whatever. And it's just kind of like, you do it, you pay the bills. But there was a time when people came in to get a tattoo and it was, you know, it was like you said, they had a skate background, a punk background, some type of music, some type of kind of rebel outcast type thing. But also though, now that it's acceptable, people, a lot of, for us, like police departments have now, some of them have reduced or kind of relaxed on their regulations.
Yep.
While other departments are holding fast, like, nope, if you've got any tattoos, they have to be covered up.
Yep.
So then you have to look at it and go, today's generations that are coming up through, you know, like you said, you start getting tattoos at 15.
Yeah.
Some of my friends were getting tattoos at 15 and 16. So by the time they were 20, I mean, some of them had sleeves, you know, full sleeves.
I graduated high school with my left arm done in graduation day. So graduation day, one of my buddies, you know, I still talk to him. Harley worked at, you know, his studio and stuff like that. So before like the graduation ceremony, I got my knuckles done. So like I'm driving to, you know, I was like almost late in traffic driving across town, 'cause that's where the shop was compared to where I went to school. Mm-hmm. And yeah, dude, I had my knuckles done. But
so when you grabbed that diploma, you were like, that's what's
exactly up. Exactly. You know, but you know, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's just a different time.
So then, okay, you know, well, that's why
it, I don't know. It's good and bad, you know, mm-hmm. like, I mean, even me, like looking at like, there's a difference between a good tattoo and a bad tattoo. Mm-hmm. Right. And then you've got, you know, everything just becomes more and more, I don't know, watered down or weak or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, and then it just kind of gets old, you know, like, I mean, I haven't, it's been a long time since I got tattooed. Mm-hmm. In the, you know, the last one I got was for a good buddy of mine, who had passed away. So it was kind of like a memorial piece, you know, nothing planned, you know, but, something that, you know, I thought made sense. And, but yeah, you know, nobody's, I don't know, like, and the cool thing about it back in the day is, you know, you look at, you know, your traditional American art and you look at the traditional Japanese stuff, you know, that's kind of the biggest, you know, you had Polynesian stuff, right? And they mm-hmm. all have like a way and a method to get that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was like sacrifices made, you know, mm-hmm. and then like with the traditional American and Japanese stuff, there was like stories behind it, you know?
Yeah.
Not necessarily just getting like a squiggly line on my face just to try to look cool right now, you know?
Yeah. A buddy of mine is actually working on a book on that, on like, traditional Japanese tattooing, the whole background of it. Yeah. And then how it has influenced, you know, like other cultures. And my thing is, I've got a person that I saw, or, you know, recently we were talking to, go and get a quick, like shoulder tattoo.
Yep.
And it was just cool. Like, hey, I'm going to go get this done. And boom, it was the cool thing. Like, it looks great. I love it. It's just one of those things. Like, nowadays, it's not this taboo thing, you know, like what it was 30 or 40 years ago.
Yeah.
Now, when you talk about getting your knuckles tattooed, see, some departments would say, well, we can't hire you. If you were going into law enforcement, they would say, and I don't know like any other profession, but they may say, hey, we can't hire you because you have a tattoo that you would basically have to wear gloves every day when you're at work.
Yeah. No, I mean, even when, so I looked at kind of like 04 timeframe,
mm-hmm.
going into the military, and I was looking at the LE stuff too. And mm-hmm. even in Arizona, like in Phoenix and stuff like that, like it was not a thing. You know, like, mm-hmm. you know, talk to the background investigator. She's like, yeah, everything's good. But, you know, we have this caveat about your tattoos. And it's like, you know, at the time, the policy was for new people coming in, right? Like if you were already hired on, they didn't mm-hmm. really care, right? Like they're not going to get rid of you. You're already in the system, right?
Yeah.
But like everything visible. I was like, mm-hmm. well, I guess that made this, you know, trip easy. So that was a, you know, thing that started and ended there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I mean, even, you know, from a military side of the house, it took a long time to get in, even though I made it in with, you know, without any waivers or anything. So, you know, things work out, you know.
You mean because of the tattoos or?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh, because they have to be able to articulate every tattoo?
Yep.
Or something like it's not like a gang or hate group or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, it was more of recruiters, you know, mm-hmm. it's like, you know, you just have to, you know, it's like anybody, you just got to be talking to the right guy.
Do you have any that are hard to explain though? That could be like misconstrued.
No.
Okay.
No, they're all pretty easy and straightforward.
Yeah. When you're talking about that, I've had to decipher stuff for some recruiters before, like just tattoos.
Yep.
And usually they're not misreading it, but it's so general. You know what I mean? It's like, nah, this is just a five-pointed star.
Yep.
It doesn't mean anything or articulate gang related. Or like one recruiter had asked me about, he's like, well, I've heard that the five-pointed star is like, you know, Chicago gang somewhere. I was like, well, true, but that is a nautical star. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, like the sparrow over here and all this stuff, like it's more, you know, pirate themed punk rock stuff. Like, I'm not getting any kind of gang vibe or whatever, but I mean, that's one of those things. Did you have something, Ski? You nope.
No, no.
Good, because I didn't want to hear you tell another fake story.
Allegedly.
Yeah.
No. So let's flash forward a little bit. So we know that you talked about your being in the military. We know a little bit about that you've got some decent background, obviously. But you've got this thing going on called Alpine Arms. And like I said, I'll repost some stuff. Like I think one of the last things I reposted was from you shooting above a piano. And I may have put like Billy Joel's Piano Man or something. But if you don't mind, tell us about like why would you have a piano on a flat range, or why would you have a piano out at the range, period?
Oh, just because I like to jam.
You like to get out there and tickle the ivories a little
bit. Yeah, so I don't know. We've talked about before, you know, like firearms and stuff like that. So started competing, I don't know, year and a half. It'll be 2 years, like this summer or whatever. That piano in particular is part of a prop for a stage in an IDPA match. You basically sat there, you know, gun on top, like, and it was called like Church Lady or something was the stage, you know, so there's always some crazy wazoo scenario of why there's 18 bad guys coming at me from every angle, you know. Right. But yeah, that's where that picture came from. So the dude that puts that match on, he's they're about an hour and 45 minutes from the shop, but they put on some pretty good stages. They're, you know, so, even for local stuff, it's pretty well thought out and elaborate.
So when you're shooting that, do you secretly feel like you're John Wick?
Or not? Oh yeah, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's the only way to do it.
You're gonna have 18 people attacking you at once.
Yeah, I got this cool like little suit that I'll wear underneath my regular clothes, you know, just so I blend in more.
Yeah. Now I know you and I have talked a little bit about competition stuff, and I think I even texted you and said like I have not been shooting. Period, like in a while, and it sucks. And I know Ski there's got a training background and used to do a lot of stuff with simunitions and like what you call it, Ski? Call and jump on the mic. What do you call it?
What, the reality based training?
Yeah, man. Yeah.
I did a little bit of it. I was part of a squad that did force on force, and I'm not a subject matter expert in it by any means, but you can learn a lot in a short amount of time when it's force on force training versus standing on a flat range. Yeah,
a little bit different. You
know? Yeah. When somebody's shooting something back at you and there's some pain compliance there and you go, man, if that was a real bullet, it would have probably penetrated the side of my vest and probably double lunged me. Right. And then you start reconsidering some tactics and going, I've been pretty negligent. Right. You know, so it was a cool gig. Learned a lot about myself, but then you really also dial in on, you know, just like what can keep people safe, right? So in our world it's law enforcement, and especially if you're a competitive shooter, man, you cannot go above the basic fundamentals of a whole lot of things when it comes to shooting and these basic tactics. You know, people want to do this high speed stuff and it's so unrealistic. Like, I mean, just drawing, you know, our holsters are what, level 3 retention holsters or whatever. Yeah. You know, the officers draw their gun all the time and, you know, dry fire and this and that. And then they do their qualification. But how often are you drawing that weapon when your heart rate's at about 180 beats a minute?
Yeah.
Right.
And you know, there's somebody on the other side of that.
Exactly. Right. And that's really, so we exposed a lot running our, you know, department through stuff like that, where it was like, hey, we don't need this high speed, low drag training. We need very basic fundamentals, and we need to get the heart rates up a little bit.
Yeah.
And
I mean, that's all it is the fundamentals, right? You're just adding more stuff to it, right?
Exactly.
So the better that you are at, you know, drawing, gripping the gun, you know, reloads or whatever, the more efficient you are on the flat range when you are in that high stress situation, you need to be able to perform the simplest tasks at a subconscious level. Right.
Absolutely. So like, and that takes so much repetition.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So, you know, it's one of those deals where, you know, where I came from on the military side, the competition world was like, oh, well, you know, it was frowned upon, you know, and a lot of dudes talked down on it. You know, like, oh, well, you know, it's not tactical. Well, you know, unfortunately, I got into a little bit later, right? But I'm still there is a ton of lessons to be learned from the competition side of the house, right? And from, you know, whether it's an LE military standpoint or your regular like civilian that just wants to go out and have fun. The cool thing about the competition is like, you can take it as serious if you want, right? Like if you want to be able to go to a, you know, a high level sectional match or nationals or something like that, you can do it. But the cool thing is like, you need to just, you know, pay your $20, pay your $25 and, you know, show up, shoot, you know, 150 to 200 rounds or something like that. So it doesn't cost you a whole heck of a lot, right? It's more time than anything, but it allows you to go out and, you know, meet like-minded people, but like from a, you know, people like, I know you guys, your schedule is as busy as mine. And, you know, it's like, I'm always fighting for 5 minutes or 10 minutes here or there. You know, I do it to myself, but like for me going to the match is like, dude, all I have to do is show up. You know what I mean? And then, right. You know, whether I practice that week or, you know, dry fire, like, hey man, do you guys need a dry fire? Like every day, if you can, you know, make it a priority, but most people don't, you know.
So let me ask you this, man, you've been in the competition world and you've been in the tactical world. There is not a direct correlation from a good competition shooter to you can plug this guy into a tactical role and he would just be great at it. No, there's none. No. And I think, I don't ask the question, I'm kind of making that statement because so many people are like, oh, that guy can shoot at 50 yards and he can unload 50 rounds out of his Glock and hit steel chest, steel plate every time. That has nothing to do with tactics, right? No. And that's where people get this mindset of like, well, he's a good shooter. He's a good shooter. I'd want him on my team and I want to clear a house with him and this and that. It's got nothing to do with that, right? It's two completely different skill sets.
Oh, 100%. Well, you know, and right now there's the whole like Instagram, right? Like the whole social media stuff. And there's the, you know, the competition guys are yelling at the military guys and the military guys are yelling at the competition guys. And it's like, dude, you know, the comp guys will be like, oh, well, you know, he's retired. His, you know, whatever he's saying is irrelevant. It's like, well, you were a competition shooter. Like I don't see you compete anymore. It's the same thing, right? Like, you're essentially retired, except you never got paid to perform that job, right? Or the majority of them didn't. So it's just like this weird bickering thing. But, it, you know, I started making my guys go to matches. So I was like, hey, dude, like Sunday morning, we're going to wake up. We're going to go shoot a match. Like, don't be butthurt, but you guys are all going to get smoked. Mm-hmm. Like there's going to be some like, you know, 14-year-old girl that's been, you know, pushed by her parents or whatever to do this at a high level. And you're going to get smoked. Like you're not like, you're going to be like, how the heck was she shooting like that? And that quickly, you know, just processing, you know, coming up with a stage plan, figuring out how to execute it, you know, and then delivering on it. Like,
and you don't have to be law enforcement or military to be good at firearms, man. There's a guy on that, like you brought up social media, right? And you got to weed through the BS with all these accounts. But you follow or ever watch any of True Exodus, his stuff, Barrett Fallbush?
No.
Dude, he's a preacher, but he just fell in love with firearms. And he started, you know, he self-taught and then he started taking classes. But he's so obsessed with it that he's developed like this very fine skill set of tactics and precision shooting that he could go teach, you know, any of these groups. And people give him shit all the time. They're like, oh, you've never been in the military or law enforcement. I'm like, how is that even a criteria to be good at tactics and good at shooting? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, that's part of that, you know, keyboard warrior thing going
on. Right. Exactly.
Like, dude, it doesn't matter. I mean, I've had, you know, guys that have worked, you know, where I do. And, like I'd never pay to take a class from them. You know, they might have been, you know, good on the X or whatever, but like they don't have the ability to translate any of those lessons learned, right? Or the skill sets, like, you know. And that's why like I'll bring in you know, a couple of buddies of mine, depending on what it is, you know, because like one, to keep that everything personable, like, you know, have a low instructor student ratio in a class, you know, so everybody's getting one-on-one time and there's not just, you know, that one guy that's got to take everybody's attention, right? Or the instructor's attention. But it's just, you know, if you have the ability to translate the skills and you have the ability to perform them. It's just about getting in front of people and making it to where it's palatable, you know, and that there's so many people from the, I don't care if they're military, law enforcement, you know, like you just have to be knowledgeable, you know, like my buddy that got me into the competition stuff is like, hey, just come out. Right. Mm-hmm. So I did it, but like, you know, his original background came from like, sports retail, like, you know, running a, you know, whatever big sporting goods store. And mm-hmm. then he got into shooting competitively, and then he got in the firearms industry, and then it just kind of, you know, it is what it is. But with, I mean, yeah,
that,
like
with you that never being know. Said, I've run across some egos standing behind the gun counter at Bass Pro Shop. I'm like, seriously, you work behind a gun counter at Bass Pro Shop? Like, yep. I don't tone it down a little bit. Well, the gun world blows my mind. It's just so funny because there's such an ego attached to it.
Never drink your own Kool-Aid, man.
Oh, that's exactly it, man.
There's always somebody, you know, that's putting in work, and you know, you just got to figure out where you're at. But
well, yeah, I look at it like you watch some basketball coaches or football coaches or any sports coach, and the coach may not have been the greatest player of football, but the coach actually can whatever, pick the right plays, work the right strategy, work on your, whether it's, you know, your stance, 3-point stance, how you're snapping off the ball, like whatever it is, the coach helps you with that. But that person may not be the greatest in that sense. So kind of like Ski was talking about, it's like you can have some people that are absolutely the best top performers. They're hitting metal every time. They're doing smooth mag changes, whatever, but they can't teach it. They can't.
Oh yeah.
Encourage people or to package it or put it away that's digestible where someone can take a course and then say, in one day I learned enough to at least be able to work dry fire drills, work, you know, reloads, mag changes, when to reload, you know, how to clear malfunction, how to clear my holster, you know, one hand, all that stuff. Sure. Yeah. And then be able to tell other people, man, that's some of the best training I've ever had. And I know guys that were in the military, like basic, like straightforward infantry. And then they take some courses. And one of those, one of the guys had, I think, 6 years under his belt, 2 or 3 deployments. And he said it took him going outside of the military 100%. To actually take a rifle course and be like, why doesn't the Army teach this? Yep. Like, why is it that the infantry is not?
Yeah. I mean, some places are getting better, you mm-hmm. know, and in some places, you know, they've got the budgets. Well, they'll bring in the professional shooters for a specific discipline. Mm-hmm. But yeah, man, it's, you know, it's one of those deals where, you know, it'd be like, you know, me going to your job and be like, hey, you know, BC, I got like, I don't know, 48 hours on the ground. I need you to teach me everything that you've done in the last 19 years. Like, it just ain't going to happen. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, yeah. It's, do you know why it won't happen? Because it'll take me 5 hours to tell stories about stuff that's completely irrelevant. Exactly. And half of that is going to be about my childhood and listen to what? Skate and punk rock music.
You are a talking fool. You should start a podcast, bro.
but you're right, though.
I mean, but that's happen. What, yeah. That's what people want. And then, you know, with the internet, man, like, you know, everybody's an expert, you know, mm-hmm. yet they haven't figured anything out or done it for real. And then, and I'm not even talking, you know, I'm like this gear. It's like, oh, well, this thing, you know, only sucks up this much battery consumption over this and this temperature. It's like, who cares, dude? You know what I mean? Like, it's irrelevant to anything that we're doing.
Right. What's the most popular class that you offer? Like, what class, if you post it, fills up?
So Angela's ladies courses, man.
Like, dude, I've been like, seeing
I don't teach him with her. Mm-hmm. I've got another buddy. It's just easier to keep everything separate. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like, dude, the ladies courses fill up, you know, pretty much within the first 2 weeks of being up. For stuff that I typically teach, I don't know. It's a toss up between, you know, pistol and like carbine stuff. The night vision stuff, you know, we'll do 1 or 2 courses of that. And occasionally we'll do some like close course stuff for like a, you know, a department or an agency.
So you have civilians signing up for NVG stuff?
Every once in a while, man. Yeah, there's some people
that's so funny to me.
Spent a lot of money on gear, man.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, yeah. No, I mean, I'm not hating on anybody that likes to collect guns and cool stuff, but they did just there's no. I don't want to say there's no practical application for it, but the stars really have to line up for you.
Let's hope. There's never.
Right. Yeah.
How about that?
Right.
But yeah, I mean, like all that kind of stuff, you know, it's like I tell people, you can have the most Gucci gear in the world, but if you don't know how to use it, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. You're not going to wake up that thumping tonight. You're not going to wake up, don your night vision, get your rig on. Yeah. You're going to grab your 12 gauge and double op buck and just start laying.
Well, once again, right. It comes back down to the fundamentals, right? How good have you practice like the most basic stuff?
Yeah,
right?
Your equipment on.
Have your significant other set you a weird random alarm in the middle of the night, and then see how you react. Right?
Like, yeah, exactly.
Hey, it's you know, dry fire training, right? Except I'm doing it, you know, with whatever gear. But
that's
the reality is people want, you know, like with a bunch of questions and this and that. Like people want, you know, complicated answers to simple problems. Yeah. It's like just work harder. Put more time into it, right? And if you don't know the thing, like search out. I guarantee you there's somebody that's been there and done that, right? There's somebody that knows how to explain and bypass the hard way, right? Mm-hmm. You're not going to get away with you know, the time frame, right? Because you're going to adapt to something or pick something up faster than me, and I'm going to have to work extra hard on it. But like this other thing, maybe like I pick up on it and you're struggling. But like you can't get around the time frame, and you can't buy, you know, equipment that's going to do it for you.
Nope.
But like, just people want, like, they want to complicate rock fights, man. It ain't that hard,
right? That it's like when Ski was a kid, he used to he loved basketball, and I remember he would just be like, Rex Chapman is like my favorite player, and I don't even know who Rex Chapman is, and Sean Kemp. He used to be like, I trade you a Sean Kemp rookie card for whatever. I'm like, man, I don't know what you're talking about, but let's get on the court, fool. Yep. Now, this cat shows up with some Reebok pumps.
Oh, yeah.
And tells me how he's going to dunk on me because now he's got these shoes that he can pump up and dunk on me like he's Dominique Wilkins or something. But it didn't happen because he didn't bring the game. He was trying to depend on this, like, Gucci gear you're talking about.
But did I look good?
Yeah. I mean, I had a set of them. Yeah. You know,
he should have gone down to Phoenix, man, and played.
I was a first round draft pick, bro, but that'd be a huge letdown, man.
Look, Ski also showed up with what was it? A Hyper Colors T-shirt too.
Oh yeah,
I won't remember that shit. But yeah, he was sweating in his pits,
man.
With colors.
After I took my starter jacket off, son.
Yeah, that starter Falcons jacket. The pullover, man.
Yeah. I just remember Ski would always be listening to like these openings music for like I think it was the Chicago Bulls. Even though that wasn't like his favorite players, but that's all he talked about was like the opening music to the Chicago Bulls. And I'm like, dude, I don't want to listen to your freaking Walkman with your damn Chicago Bulls intro. Let's just play. Let's play head up.
But see, I don't know if we would have gotten along when we were younger, man.
No, because I dunked on you. I would dunk on you all the time.
I'm just, you know what I would have done?
Just kidding, dude.
You know what I would have done, man? I would have backed one of those screws out of your skateboarding ramp. So you caught it like going off the end, and then I would have loosened up one of your wheels or something like that.
No,
just like in thrashing, dude. Throw some like those little jacks down in front of you. So, you know, you got a broken wrist.
That's right. Daggers rule. If anybody's listening, just go watch Thrashing. The first Saturday afternoon you get, just watch the movie Thrashing. It's got Roland with James Brolin as the star. Hot Chili Peppers are in it too. Like
A skateboarder to a Sicario, man. That's a career progression.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, if you want to hear a good podcast that he's on as a guest, he's on Toby Morris's One Life, One Chance podcast. Mm-hmm. Great, great show for anybody out there listening. If you don't know who Toby Morris is, lead singer H2O, like one of the most positive dudes in the world. But where he lives, apparently out in L.A., he gets to run across a lot of people. And he and James Brolin, Josh Brolin, I'm sorry, became friends. But it's a really cool episode to hear Josh talk about growing up skating and and how he got the role for Thrashing. And then just from there, what That's skating pretty cool. And punk rock and music yeah. just meant to him, going to see like garage bands play and stuff. So yeah. I went off on a tangent, but that podcast. No,
that's pretty cool.
Solid.
I was going to say, is he more positive than Tim?
From Lillington's? Dude, Tim they're O'Hara? Like, hey, they're neck and neck, man. Tim's our boy now, man. Like he came on the show and what a nice guy, man. Like so positive. He was just on Jason Piccolo's.
I think I posted a couple of things on it. Yeah, it's getting another good episode with you too.
Yeah, man, I was fortunate. Jason is just a good dude too, man. Piccolo and sent me a message like, "Hey, you want to jump on as just a quick guest host? You know, Tim's going to be on," yeah. and I was like, "Oh, man, definitely." You know, yeah. just same thing though. Like with H2O and a lot of those bands pushing just that PMA.
Yeah.
Just being positive and looking at life and going, okay, like with Toby starts a podcast and it blows up. And now he's got lead singer Sepultura, Derek Green, is like his co-host.
Oh, really?
So now, yeah. So now they're doing a lot of episodes together, which is really cool.
That's cool.
But man, he gets great guests on there. It's just really cool. I'm good friends with the producer guy that the tech that's helped him out with a lot of that. And that cat, this guy, Joe Vasion, is just, he's a wild man.
I like his hilarious. I like his studio setup, man. He's like in his kitchen, and it's like a 1960s vintage yeah. style kitchen. Yeah. It doesn't match like him. You yeah. know, it's like yeah. whose kitchen is he sitting in, man? But you'd think it'd be all these music posters, this and that, and it's yeah. like it's like saucers and coffee cups and flowers.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I'm like, if you go and listen to his episodes, man, like a lot of people hear us. Talking about PMA, and Steven knows, and Ski know, like we know what it is. And
yeah.
so when we're talking about, like, other people are like, well, what is all this stuff about? Yeah. And then we mentioned like Bad Brains or like,
oh, yeah, I went on a Bad Brains rant or not rant, yeah. but like listening spree the last, you know, earlier this week. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I can remember like as a kid just shouting the words to Attitude, you know, oh, and yeah. just being like, even at a young age, understanding. That PMA exists, and there's just this attitude of positive mental attitude. Just switch it on. Well, it doesn't mean like you're always nice. It just means look at life in a positive way. And then how are you going to address the problem? You know,
well, it's hard to get outside of it, you know, like you're mm-hmm. in whatever your world is in your own little bubble, you know, but the problem nowadays, man, is just like, yeah, everybody's got this sense of entitlement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's just a lot of negativity associated with it. And you got a lot of people that like, I don't know. They just never been punched in the mouth before different times, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I hate saying it, but you're exactly right.
Yeah. So that's what BC and I, we're not social media people. We're not tech people. We're not even really podcasters, but
don't tell him.
Oh yeah. 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 We wanted to start doing like the show and just, yeah, like, and I've never even said that. Like, people are like, I guess when you're doing podcasts, you're supposed to ask people to do reviews. I wouldn't even know where to tell somebody how to do a review for our show. So, hey, if you're listening, do a review. Yeah. Yeah. Like and subscribe to what? I don't even know what all
exactly.
that means.
Just whatever.
So this is episode 18 for us. And because you started hitting on the PMA, and that's just one of our things, is just to keep a conversation flowing that's easy to listen to, and people just feel better after they listen to it. That's the whole purpose of our show at this point.
Because
all the time people are like, "Oh, you have a podcast? What's it about?" I'm like, "I really don't know. Every episode's different.
Everything's different. It just kind of goes its own direction." And
yeah, we just talk, and then we hit end, and then people comment and like, "Oh, that was fun," you know. But whatever. But yeah, so hit subscribe and reviews.
Like,
hey, Steven, we need to hire you to just be our producer, man.
Yeah.
You clearly know what you're doing.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. This is semi-professional at everything, you know.
I don't even think that Ski has our podcast on his Spotify account. Like, I don't even think he has liked our podcast on his Spotify account.
Don't even know what that means.
We'll figure that out. Like one day we'll figure
yeah.
that out. But when you go back to like Bad Brains, so I know we've talked about it, but you were pretty young too when you got into like punk and hardcore, yeah. just music in general, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So like you know, I originally listened to, you know, a lot of metal growing up, to like watching, you know, like watching Ricky Rackman on Headbangers Ball and, you know, Sepultura and, you know, old Metallica and all that kind of stuff. And then got into the punk stuff kind of like, I don't know, junior high. And then I, you know, I hung out with dudes that were all older than me. And then that's where, you know, I really started listening to like The Damned, and that's when, you know, the Bad Brains were exposed to, and, you know, like a lot of that, that early, you know, late 70s, early 80s, you know, kind of punk rock. You know, so, I mean, I saw Bad Brains, I don't know, it probably was 98 or 99, you know, which, you know, obviously they were doing stuff way before that, but least I got to see them.
I was going to say, like, that when I talk about it, and the same thing, like, I've only seen them once, and it was in 1989, and Leeway opened up for them. It was on the Quickness album tour, but easily one of the greatest shows I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was awesome. I didn't get to see the whole thing. So my buddy who I went with, he was older than me, but he got hammered, dude. And basically he got on stage, like, I can't remember if it was three or four times. But he'd jump up on the, you know, the right side of the stage, get through the security and stuff, right? Like, dude, he stole HR's mic and all this other stuff. Like, and eventually he got scooped up and thrown out. That was a pretty good night.
So when you talk about that, like, my like first stage dive was at that show. I was 13, and diving into the crowd was just incredible. You know what I mean? Just the whole energy of it. But when you were talking about like the mic stand or whatever, there's a story that John Joseph tells. And for those listening, John Joseph was the lead singer of Cro-Mags, which is like a great New York hardcore band. But he had written basically a autobiography called Evolution of Cro-Magnon, right? And in that book, he talks about touring with Bad Brains when he was young. I want to say 19, 20, 21, somewhere around there. But they end up traveling south. And it's like the first time Bad Brains or anyone in their scene had traveled down into the south to play these shows. Yeah. At these little dive bars
out of DC, yeah.
Yeah, so they're going down in, you know, to the Carolinas and stuff, and they end up going and playing a bar. And when they set up, the way the story goes, John Joseph hears a bouncer or somebody working the door or something drop the N-word talking about Bad Brains.
Yeah.
And so John just snaps, grabs a mic stand, I guess they're unloading equipment, and starts going to this guy's ass, like, right, just hitting him with a mic stand and stuff. I think he splits his head open. Police respond out there, and I guess there was enough witnesses to be able to say what happened.
Yeah.
That basically the cops were like, all right, hands off. Like, that dude got a little street justice. We're good to go. Which, you know, you wouldn't imagine that being the case with the stereotypes. That was like 1980, I think, or 1981. Yeah. I think, like, man, that's badass. But when people talk about the influence of Bad Brains, and like you said, to see them in the 90s and then see them in the 80s. But I mean, they were playing shows in the late 70s. Yep. And of course, their sound evolves as they get older and as they're getting, you know, exposed to different books and to different different cultures. And just, man, they are absolutely incredible. I just had a guy the other day talking about how he's listening to Bad Brains now. And I'm like, man, it I don't want to say like mind blowing and oversell it. It's just, it's an incredible sound. And a lot of bands can't tap into that.
No. And I mean, you look at, you know, where they came from and what they started, like, and to be trucking along. Like, I just saw, actually on my Spotify list or whatever, there was a new Damn song. I mean, dude, they were the new, like, a new single or something, but like they were the first like European punk band to like travel the United States, you know, before the Sex Pistols and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So like 79 or something, or I think they started in 77 or 78, but like they were the first punk band to like tour, you know, but like they're still doing stuff. What is that, 40 something years later?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's not like they were signing big record labels either, you know, like this is a labor of love.
Yeah, that's the, you know, the argument everybody wants to get into, and I try to stay out of it. It's like, oh, is it Sex Pistols? Is it the Ramones? Is it the Clash? But nobody ever mentions the Damned in that conversation. I'm kind of like, you may want to throw some of the Damned in there too.
Yep.
Just when you start talking about the Pioneers. I was listening to, and I wore the shirt just the other day, Stiff Little Fingers. I don't know if you remember them, but Ski, they were Irish punk band, and man, They were legit, dude. They're still really good. Ski, why are you sitting there daydreaming, man? We talking too much punk rock? Throw in some metal for us, man. You heard?
Oh, the flexible long fingers. That's the one.
Man, you better hush.
They're a Scottish metal band.
Man, be quiet, boy.
How was that club show you went to a couple months ago?
Did you hear that? Say Ski? It again.
How was that clutch show that you went to a couple months
ago? Oh man. That was a good one. That was one of those ones where, man, who was the lineup? It was
JD
Pincus.
Yep.
Pavement.
Helmet.
And Helmet.
Quicksand.
Quicksand and Clutch. Yeah, no, it was one of those ones where when I got there, I told myself I was just gonna hang out in the back and enjoy the show. And as soon as Clutch came on, man, I was a ball of sweat up front. Well,
because I went a couple weeks after. Oh, go ahead, BC.
No. You go ahead. I'll tell mine.
I was going to say, a couple weeks after when they were in Colorado, I went and saw them. But I was bummed. Like, I ended up getting a last-minute, like, work phone call that kept me from seeing Pincus because I wanted to see him. I've seen him live when he was playing with Honky. But he's been doing it forever too, you know. Butthole Surfer days, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think if I remember right, because Ski and I were talking about Quicksand, I was freaking out too because I loved Helmet, grew up listening to Helmet. And then Quicksand was like members of Gorilla Biscuits, Burn, like a lot of these old New York hardcore bands. And Quicksand was amazing. It sounded like. And I know those guys continue to play in bands and their skills increase, but man, they were amazing. We missed some of their set though, because Ski and myself and my brother and a few others were ordering food and it took forever. And I was starting to get antsy because I was like, man, I got to see the whole set. I see all the Quicksand. I missed some of it. But when Ski talks about standing in the back, like, yeah, we were standing in the back until he and my brother got that feeling to just fly right up in there. And the next thing I know, Ski's got his phone out and he's like recording he and my brother getting silly in the pit. But
oh, nice. Now it's there forever. Show. It's in the cloud.
Yeah. It was a really, really good show though. And that was the last one that I've been to, man. Yeah. I've seen like some live music since then. But like a punk or metal or a show like that with a lot of people and a lot of energy, that was the last one I've seen.
Yeah.
And I want to catch some more. I mean, there's like all these festivals going on now. Like everybody is coming back around and wanting to tour. And it's like, I got to start shelling out some money and go catch some shows.
Man. I just wish I had more time, man.
Yeah. Well, you know? And that's another thing too. It's like, you know, you end up having punk rock bowling and stuff out in Vegas, like 3 days worth of, I don't know, fucking 40 bands or something, 50 bands.
We've already pitched this idea. I don't remember what episode it was on, but I think if we start talking about it in every episode, it might just come to fruition. But I think the Disruptors need to hold their own festival. What if we did a Disruptors music fest?
Yeah.
Right? Like Field of Dreams. If you build it, they will come. Is that...
I mean, yeah, if we get bands, like people will definitely come.
I mean,
it's like getting
like,
the bands and the money. We got it.
We have like the 7 degrees of separation to some big bands, man. Like we can call somebody that knows somebody that knows somebody to maybe get a big band, right?
Yeah.
So I think we should start promoting this Disruptors Fest right now. And
you should just start it now. Be like, hey, pick a random date. And hey, like, this is when it's going down.
We're having a music event.
And then they're going to be obligated to go. You know? It's like, they're showing up and be like, sorry, dude.
Yeah, and we're just laying it out there. Disruptors is going to host a music event. They call those concerts.
Yeah.
Concert.
We actually have
that's what they used to call them. Now they're festivals and everything else, right?
I mean, we have talked about that. About
I'm being serious when I say that. Like, I think we're gonna pull it together, man, and
at least do some shows, some bands.
It could be
here
done, man. Like, you could find like a little, like a smaller club venue, like
Look, when I was a kid, this dude and he and I talked the other night for like 2 hours. I had not talked to this guy in like 30 years, and we reconnected recently, and he's out on the West Coast, out in Portland. But man, that guy was like a senior in high school, and he knew all these bands up in Washington, D.C. He would drive up there, catch the shows over the weekend, and then come back. And then in high school, when he would want a band to play, they would just write letters or call. He would rent out like a neighborhood community clubhouse or whatever, like with a swimming pool and stuff. And the next thing you know, like these bands are coming in, like Jawbox and stuff, and Super Chunk and stuff, and they're playing these shows that this 18-year-old's putting on. And I was young, I was like 15, but that taught me it can be done. If there's something you want to do, connect with the bands and line it up. Go ahead,
Scott. Yeah, you got to find the accessible artists. Like 2020, BC was there. I threw a house party, and we flew in a dude from Nashville who has a Grammy. I'm just going to name drop it. Mike Ferris. Deal. Look him up. Mike Ferris. Screaming Cheetah Wheelies. Now he's doing his own solo stuff right under Mike Ferris. He came to the house, and we did a rock the house party. And dude hung out for like 8 hours.
Yeah.
Right. He wasn't obligated to do anything, but he showed up. He rocked out for us. He ended up hanging out, eating barbecue, this and that, hanging out, man. Just, you know, but just talking with everybody there. And then, you know, the light bulb went off. I looked at BC and I'm like, there's no reason we can't host our own show. You just have to find somebody willing to do it. Now, you know, luckily it wasn't, you know, it didn't cost an arm and a leg to do it. But, yeah, there's some bands that, you know, that wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole unless it was for, you know, $100,000 or something like that. But event and the people that were there were like, this is so awesome. You need to do it again. And that's what BC and I have been talking. I'm like, man, let's just do it again. Let's add two more bands to the bill, rent out a venue, and just start promoting it, right? I mean, that's what these people did back in the day.
Exactly. I mean, a lot of people, too, they just, you know, if it's a cool thing, they just want to be a part of it, right? Like, so, but I mean, yeah, you've got plenty of bands, that, you know, that, I mean, back in the day, you know, you could like call them up and they'll go play your house for, you know, $1,500 and they would drive out from California. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You just gave them beer and like whatever. And they drive out in their van and then they turn, you know, they for an hour and a half and they, you know, go back in their van.
Have you ever seen the video for Whiskey in the Jar, Metallica?
Yeah.
They're playing a house party. They're like set up in the corner, man, and the house is just packed and they're just ripping it. That's the kind of party we need to throw, man.
Oh, 100%. But I mean, it's just about, you know, getting the once again, the right people involved, you know, like it's going to be work, but it's not something that's not doable.
And, all right. Well, Steven, if we did an event, are you coming?
Shit, dude.
All right, we're not even going to charge you at the door.
Oh, no, we need you to work security, man. You got to keep.
Let me know what color wristbands they're going to be in a text, and I'll go get.
You said wristbands, man. I'm just throwing out a life hack here. You didn't hear it from me, but if you pay attention and you've been to enough concerts, if you want to get into the VIP area or the pit. Right. They usually handing out just like a fluorescent green bracelet, a fluorescent pink bracelet. Mm-hmm. You can go on Amazon and you can buy like 20 different colors for $8.99. And you stuff three of each color in your pocket. You go up to the pit area. You look and see what they're wearing. You go to the bathroom, pop one of your bracelets on. They're not checking your ticket. Yeah. They're looking at your bracelet, man. So
I like it.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Because a dude that looks like me is definitely going to have the right color, you know?
Well, I remember when they used to do the, I guess they still do it, but in the clubs a long time ago, they did the hand stamp thing.
Yep.
And people would like go out and try to be like rub your hand against your friend's hand and it leaves the ink. It's like, just pay to get in. Like, quit being so damn stingy. Yeah. But, you know, these are hard times. You got to do what you got to do.
Man.
Hey, so when we're talking about music, you mentioned Sepultura and stuff. Who is a band or a band song or whatever, like if someone right now says, hey, look, put me on something that I haven't heard. It doesn't have to be new or anything. But what would be like a good band that you would tell someone to put you on? You know what I mean? Put you on the spot.
I think this that's a rough one, man. I guess it depend on what kind of genres they already liked.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Let's say metal.
For metal.
Mm-hmm.
I'd probably turn them on to some old school Sepultura.
Yes, you would. Yes, you know, like you
that
would.
That would be my probably first choice right there.
Mm-hmm.
Then as far as like the punk rock stuff goes, you got to give them the basis, right? It's the mm-hmm. fundamentals. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like the Damned or something first. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, everything, you know, the newer stuff's just different. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you know, just across the board.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's where I'd start them, and if they liked it, they could go to somewhere else. Turn them on to Clutch. You know, they're another one of those bands.
Yeah.
That, you know, if you listen to them, same thing with Bad Brains, right? Like, their catalog has changed so much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think, dude, honestly, like I sent you, I think a song link from one of their newer songs off this latest album. But like, mm-hmm. I think this is the best album that they put out in a long time. Not that the other ones were bad, but mm-hmm. you know, lyrically and musically, like, shit's just, it's dialed in, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, that would kind of be, you know, that and you know, Social Distortion's always been a big band that I always go back to. Reverend mm-hmm. Horton Heat. Yeah, I mean, those are kind of the ones that I always go back to. Old Pantera, you know. Yeah. Super Joint Ritual. And
I love Uncle Phil, man.
Yeah. Well, it's like, you know, talking super groups and stuff like that. You know, they've done their thing too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with stacking everybody together, you know, on some of Phil's side projects.
I'm not even mad about, I mean, it's not Pantera without Vinny and Dime, but I'm not mad about Zakk Wylde stepping in.
Yeah.
Dimebag being one of his big influences. So like people are like, oh, it's not Pantera and whatever. Like they're still going to rip Pantera. You still got Phil singing. You got a badass guitarist up there. You know, it is what it is, man.
Yep.
They'd still be badass to go see him.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I only got to see them once. It was I don't know. I want to say like 94, 95 kind of time frame.
Oh, that's like in the like, prime too, man.
Yeah, like it was New Year's Evil, I believe is what the show was called. It was who opened? So it was, I want to say Megadeth was there. I don't remember that quite the order. I want to say Soulfly opened.
Damn.
Megadeth was there. Pantera. Slayer. And that was the only time I saw Slayer, and Black Sabbath was like the closer.
Oh.
So I was like eighth grade, you know, like my buddy Cole, he got two tickets for his birthday, and he brought me along with him, and we went and jammed out. That was a good show.
So
I wanted Slayer to be louder. And you know, Megadeth played, you know, twice as long as everybody else. So man. I was like, come on, man. But that was a solid lineup for a single, night show.
Yeah. Did Phil have something to say?
Philip Beach and Selmo here.
Yeah.
The greatest band on the bill was obviously Pantera. And at that point in our career, I was just so fucking high. What was I talking about?
Oh, that's my Philip and Selmo right there.
That's pretty good. Ski, who you going with, man?
Dude,
who you telling us about?
I got two songs right now.
All right.
First band, He Is Legend. Name of the song is White Bat. They're a North Carolina band down by the coast, Wilmington area.
Yes.
He Is Legend, and holy shit, that band rips. Look them up on YouTube, watch the video, but the song White Bat. And then you'll be hooked on everything else from there on out. And then the other one is a completely different vibe, man. Warren Zeters, Ride the Lightning.
Oh, I thought you said Warren Zevon.
No, I said okay. Warren Zeters. Zeters. Okay. I don't know. Somebody will probably correct me. Look up Ride the Lightning. It's a badass song. It's one of those songs, man, like you'd be doing stuff in slow motion when you're listening to it.
Okay.
Like cool stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. Like an endo on your bike.
Yeah.
But in slow motion.
It's the only way.
I'm going to give you two bands. I'm going to merge all genres and go with Sick of It All. Because Sick of It All, like punk rock kids dig them, metal heads dig them, New York hardcore, obviously they were there from inception, basically. So check out any of Sick of It All stuff. And then I'm going to go with a little bit of Dag Nasty.
Yep.
A little Washington, D.C. punk rock band that not enough people talk about. So,
I actually pulled them up the other day and was listening to that and some Peg Boy stuff.
Yeah. Out of Chicago, old Naked Reagan guitarist, I think, was with Peg Boy, man. Yeah. So Dag Nasty, I was just talking to a dude the other day about it. I was like, man, check out a little Dag Nasty. Values Here is a good song and Circles. Yep. But I mean, you can't go wrong with any of the other stuff, but I dig it. Skeet, you hold fast. Steve, where can we find you on the interwebs?
Oh, all in cyberspace. So we got alpinearms.com for the actual generic website, but Instagram, you know, we do a lot there. If you're interested in any training opportunities or what we got going on, we'll put out like a newsletter. So if you go to the alpinearms.com, you can sign up for a newsletter. That's pretty cool. Especially with, you know, our industry and all the 2A stuff being shadow banned, it'll make it a lot easier for us to get information out there and stay in tune with everybody.
I dig it. Ski, you got anything for us?
Yeah, sign up for our newsletter.
we'll get one eventually, man.
like and subscribe.
Yeah.
I'm going to throw our email address out there that we only check like once every 6 months. But if you want to email us and you don't have social media, I think it's thedisruptors.bc.ski@gmail.com. So,
that sounds about right.
Don't sign up for our newsletter. We don't have one, but you can email us at thedisruptors.bc.ski@gmail.com.
Yeah.
We don't.
Yeah, that's have super own, easy to remember.
Yeah, and you could always hit us on Instagram. Was it the Disruptors?
Yeah.
BC and Ski, I think.
You want to know why we're not on Facebook?
Disruptors podcast, isn't it?
Yeah Disruptors podcast. Yeah.
BC and I argue all the time about whether or not we should be on other social media platforms, and neither of us want to do it. We're just not going to do it.
We can't do it. Word of mouth. Hey, do me a favor. If y'all listen to this, tell five other people about it, man.
That's the other thing, man. I was going to bring up, man. We got stickers to hand out, and I don't know how we're going to do it yet, but stand by on Instagram.
We're going to figure out
how to make that happen.
Actually, just send us a message on Instagram, and if you're cool enough to send us a message, we'll mail you a free sticker. That's not a bad deal.
But man, a little bit of effort on both sides.
Yeah, you have to, once you get your sticker, though, you have to put it somewhere, take a picture of it, and then tag us in it. Because like we want to see where the stickers are going.
Yeah, it's that punk rock thing, man. It's the word of mouth is where it all comes from.
Hey, we're going to grow this thing grassroots, man. Yep. And one day, Steven's going to be like, man, I remember back in the day when I was on that show when they didn't know what they're doing.
I'll send you an email and not get a response. Just trying to see what you guys are doing way at the top, you know?
All right, man. Disruptors out.